What? That just it opened another file.
Okay.
When I get it on my computer, I'll have to get it all in one spot.
I think it's working there.
Yeah.
Okay, test 1, 2, 3, 4. Is it moving? Yeah. Okay.
Yep. All right. If we could just get a little background information, where you were born, went to school, stuff like that. Did you grow up around here?
Born. We're living in Gridley, actually at Gray Lodge Wildlife Area. That's where my dad was managing, was assistant manager of Gray Lodge Waterfowl Area.
Oh, wow.
That would have been in 1950. He started working there in 1952, and then I was born in 1955. And then he became a warden. Well, he worked at Gray Lodge for a while, then became a wildlife biologist working in Humboldt, Del Norte County. And then from there, we transferred up to Honey Lake Waterfowl Area, and he managed Honey Lake Waterfowl Area for a couple of years. And then in 1963, he became a warden and transferred down to Salton Sea, Indio, the Palm Springs area. So he was game warden down there, and then he moved up to Plumas County in 67. And then that's where I went to high school and junior high and all that stuff. I graduated in Quincy High School in 73. I worked 5 years for the U.S. Forest Service. And then I went to Feather River College, got an AA degree. Then I went down to Chico State, got my bachelor's degree at Chico State. I went to work for Fish and Game in 1979.
Okay. So that just covered my next question. Prior jobs.
So 79, I was game warden for Ubity City, Marysville for 5 years, actually 6 years. And then I transferred to the Red Bluff District, and I had Tehama County as my patrol district for 6 years. And then I came up to Plumas County in 90, I guess it was, 91. And then I was a warden from 91 to a year ago here in Plumas County. And then I retired with 31-year service.
Wow, that's cool. All right. When you started out as a game warden, what was the training like? I mean, is it like military, or do you go to a police academy and get trained?
I did. I went to Modesto Police Academy, and there's a group of seven of us, and the game wardens didn't have their own academy like they do now. That's a positive move to have their own academy. So we would go to different academies throughout the state. There were seven of us, and there's like, I was in there with Stockton PD, Modesto PD, Stanislaus County Sheriff, a bunch of the different sheriff's outfits. And so I went to that academy, and it was different. So on campus, we stayed in barracks, and that used to be an old World War II hospital, and it's been torn down. Yeah. It's no longer around. And there's four of us to a room, and the barracks were kind of up on stilts and really old and decrepit. And actually, we had a lot of fun there, a lot of fun. So, yeah, stuff we weren't supposed to do, we did.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you trained in firearms, of course, and
then it was a 13-week academy, so we went 13 weeks, and it was basic law enforcement. They didn't have any special fish and game training whatsoever. You were trained as a cop, and then when you got out, then you went on your own with fish and game. You know, we didn't have any field training officers like they do now.
Yeah.
When you came out of the academy, you went to work. But the competition, and I'm sure the other folks are going to relate to that, when I came on board, is really stiff. Really, really stiff to be a game warden. There was several thousand people applied to be a game warden when I came on. And like I said, stated earlier, Jerry Brown had just, in 1978, had the biggest one-year increase in the warden position in the state of California ever, and he had 50 new positions, and I was part of that group that came on.
Yeah. So, any, stuff to do with animals or the wildlife you had to learn or
OJT
later on?
Yeah. On-job training, or knew it ahead of time. And by being qualified by the department back then, having so many people, you could pick people that were hunters and fishermen already, not like it is now, but people had to have a background. And the test was oriented towards hunting and fishing, and it's not the resources and the wildlife. The test now, when you go to take it, it's not that way. Like, I remember some of the test questions coming on board were the five species of deer that inhabit California. You know, the ocean fisheries, and you just know a lot. You had to know fish and game in California in order to pass a test, and it's not that way anymore. But you, so in order to be a warden, you already had to know, have a pretty good solid background in, in fisheries and wildlife in the state of California already.
Huh. How would you describe the job of being a fish and game warden? You know, do you work?
I mean, the bad sides of it or good sides of it?
I guess just if you were to describe it to somebody, how would you describe it?
You have to be completely, totally self-motivated. You have to be self-motivated. Like, I saw my supervisor probably once a month. And so you have to be honest on your timesheets.
Uh-huh.
And when you're working, and we have a daily activity report, every hour that you worked, you report. You wrote down where you're at and what you're doing every hour, and you had to code it to the species. If you're working deer, you had to code that hour to working deer. If you're working trout, work at trout, warm water fisheries, abalone, sturgeon, you name it, you had to code it. The time code system for our hours is extremely complicated. Some people told me that's probably the most complicated in the state because you're different funding sources, and if you're working this and this and that, you got to code your time different ways. But you got to be very self-motivated because you don't work with anybody else. I mean, the time, amount of times I doubled up with somebody else and worked with them, I mean, not very much, very few times, just a few times a year. But so you work on your own, it was dangerous on your own because you don't have any backup, and you're by yourself out there, and the only times you do work together with another person would be like on a night flight, and you get a group of people out working that, or a checkpoint, you get some people doing that, but all the rest of the time you work by yourself. So you have to have a drive, an inner drive to go out there and work and to do it, because you're not going to get patted on your back or anything like that. It's what you do.
Yeah, that's...
You hear the turkeys in the background, they're going for it, huh? And the woodpeckers, too.
Did you work much with other agencies, like Forest Service?
Up here with Forest Service. Forest Service law enforcement officers. I've worked with them probably more than anybody else. And then secondly to that, with the Sheriff's Department, up here, Plumas County Sheriff's Department.
Mm-hmm.
Lester Gibb, primarily the Forest Service. And that's well. They asked me when I retired to go to work for the Sheriff's Department, so So I went to work for them afterwards.
You were already familiar with them then.
Yeah, and actually I felt privileged that they felt highly enough. The local deputies kept asking me, hey, we'd like you to work for us. I said, man, I'm retired. I got to take care of my wife and do some other things and do it. And then I was at a funeral really earlier this year or last year, and the sheriff took me aside and said, Bob, I said, we'd like you to come to work for us. We really would like to have you come to work for us. And I said, well, okay, I don't want to do boat patrols. I had enough boat patrols and stuff. If I do anything, I want to be a street deputy. And they said, okay, that's perfect. So that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's when the head guy comes and
it's good.
Taps you on the shoulder. That feels pretty good.
Yeah, I felt honored by that. But then they knew my dad, and we had a tradition here for 42 years in Plumas County. My dad's name was Bob also. So for 42 years, he had a game warden in Plumas County by the name of Bob Orange. Pretty cool.
The bad guys get to know that name, huh?
Maybe so.
I was going to ask you what kind of a territory do they give you? Like, is it going to be like mixed topography, you know, like mountains and a valley, or
it depends on where you're assigned. And you're assigned different areas. Like when I had Sutter County, I had a aspect of Sutter County bordered, geographic boundary. Mm-hmm. And then Tehama County, I had the north half of Tehama County.
Uh-huh.
And then up here in Plumas County, basically I worked Plumas County. You had another warden over in Portola, had one in Quincy. He passed away, and they didn't fill his position for a long, long time. So you had two guys working the county, and we just both worked it. We'd go any place else in the county, and we started going down in numbers, and we finally got another position back over in Quincy. But so, basically, for the last 20 years, my patrol area is Plumas County, north half of Plumas County.
Do you get to choose where you get assigned?
You can go places. When you first come out of the academy, they assign you where to go, and so you have to. It may have changed. You had to be in that location for 3 years before you could transfer, and then transfers on seniority basis. And then when you transfer someplace else, you had to stay in that location for 1 year before you could put in a transfer request and go to another place again. So you're just going to be hopscotching like crazy. If you went someplace, you had to stay there a year before you're eligible to transfer again, and it's done on seniority basis.
Hmm. What about like in a district that's close to a state line, or
I guess up here in Nevada, we boarded up against Nevada over here. Yeah.
Do you have to stay on one side, or do you hook up with the?
You can. All wardens are federally deputized, and I don't know of any other law enforcement guys really that are federally deputized. Also, we're state law enforcement, but then we're also federally deputized, and the reason for that is because of. Because of the migratory wildlife, like ducks, like they migrate back and forth. And so the regulations on ducks are set by the federal government. And so to enforce the duck regulations, you have to be federally deputized on that. And then like deer herds, like in the east side of this county here, over in zone XX and X7 and stuff, those deer migrate between Nevada and California. So you got a migratory deer herd. And so to enforce regulations, you have to be federally deputized. Doves, another bird that goes back, they're a federal bird. You know, and pigeons and stuff. So we're federally deputized in order to enforce federal regulations. And then same thing with fisheries, you know, salmon out on the ocean and stuff, enforce federal fishery regulations also, as well as the state regulations.
Oh, I didn't know.
So you have federal ID and a federal badge also.
Wow. So you can go across states and that doesn't matter.
And, exactly. And some of our officers have worked undercover in other states, Alaska, Oregon, and there's some, we've done some work in other states. I personally have not, but other wardens have.
But they can like pull a guy from another state where the local guy is up there is not going to know him.
True.
Work undercover. Okay.
True.
How about military bases, private property, or you just said that you're federally deputized, so now I'm. You can go on.
Sure. I worked at Beale Air Force Base, and like Beale Air Force Base, people didn't know they had a sergeant, airman sergeant, and two airmen in charge of the pheasant pheasant club at Beale Air Force Base. They raised 18,000 pheasants a year, and people would go out there and hunt, and I'd go out and work that. Then they also had some duck hunting out there, and I'd work on Beale, and they have base game wardens, but they're... I mean, they're not armed. They're just people that they've put out there to go and kind of patrol it. But I'd hook up with them and go out there and I'd check pheasant hunters and waterfowl hunters and stuff on Beale. Beale's a pretty big, that's a pretty big base, actually. Yeah. They have a lot of stuff going on there. They do that, Hunter Leggett. I know other places, they have deer seasons, hog hunting and stuff, and wardens go on to federal military bases and enforce the laws on those.
You ever work with, ASPCA or anything?
American Society for Prevention of Cruelty of Animals?
Yeah.
No. I've not worked with them, but they, lately, the last few years, they've been providing funding to the Department of Fish and Game and funding the canine programs that we have going on. They've been giving significant funds to California Game Board to help with the training.
So great.
They've become an ally.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Like you can get all of them you can get.
Sure, absolutely. And we caught flack for it. I mean, hunting organizations have given Fish and Game and us a flack for hooking up with them. But what it is you got poaching. And anyway, legitimate hunters have an interest out there. ASPCA, the pose hunting interest, you know, different hunting organizations, stuff like that. And they pose. I mean, butt heads like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
However, when it comes to poaching, each of them, if you have a pie, a circle, and you interlace the circle just a little bit, like an Olympic ring, you have a commonality of an interest there, and the commonality of interest in there, neither of them like poaching. So ASPCA doesn't like poachers, and legitimate hunting and fishing wildlife groups don't like poachers. Mule Deer Foundation, Rocky Mountain Elk doesn't. So just exactly, and so where we meet is right there in that area, right there where we have a common interest, right, and that's where they're helping us.
Okay. Well, I forget what they call that, but I learned that in philosophy.
Okay. Okay. Very good.
It's got some big $3 word attached to it.
Okay. You know what I'm talking about. So that's where it comes in. Yeah. Some people say, man, no, what are you doing? How come they're helping you? You know, we hate those people. Hate those people. No. You have a commonality of interest right there.
Yeah.
And that's where we meet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get support. And that's where we've got support in the Warden Association and our work in the legislature. Yeah, they help us out.
Great. We were talking about undercover work. Have you done undercover work?
I have, yeah.
Do you get any training, any special training for that, or?
Not really. We did some, you know, vehicle and stuff, but not much. You get a fake ID and you go work. I work abalone undercover on the ocean, and I worked undercover out on the Farallons, which is those islands off of San Francisco, yeah. And I was out there for a while working undercover and watching the abalone divers out there when we still had commercial abalone diving, and then the commercial urchin fishermen, watched them for abalones. But primarily, but I worked on, I did some bear sales of bear galls, and selling of bear galls, did some of that. But primarily, it was all geared towards abalone, and that was a long-term assignment. And so, we didn't get any overtime pay. We had no overtime pay until relatively recently. But you go, I take off from here, and I work down there for extended time periods and build up a bunch of a time bank, and then come back and take off a month or two.
04597 location one.
Then I worked on. I did work on. Wasn't that cover? I worked on the broad red line Eureka, which is a 110-foot patrol boat. And so we do. You'd go out for 3 to 5 day cruises, and you'd launch, and then you'd have a couple rehibs, which is rigid hull inflatable boats.
Yeah.
And you'd launch those off the deck, and then you take a radar bearing or a compass bearing. So with the main radar on the main ship, let's see a bigger boat out there over the horizon or close to the horizon or something, and you'd launch a little boat, and you'd take a compass bearing and scoot on out there and check them, and you'd check all the sport people that way, too. And then you'd sleep on the boat at night and pull into Trinidad or Crescent City or something like that, and sleep on the boat, and then you'd go off it working.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. You ever do anything with, like, smuggling or sale of illegal animals, like illegal birds, or somebody catching hawks or other birds of prey to sell, or anything
Did
like
not.
That?
No.
No?
Not on sales of birds, no. No. Like I said, just bear galls as far as illegal sales and bear parts, but not on birds or like peregrine falcons and stuff like that.
Lizards or any of that stuff.
Yeah, and you got all the parakeets and all those people hiding the birds in their pants and things like that and trying to bring them into... You know, legally, no, I never did that.
Okay, is that something that game wardens might
Who really is involved with that more than we are is the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, there's only 200 of those folks in the frickin' nation. And here, you know, we talk about our low numbers in California where we have one... We have one warden for every 198,000 people, I think it is, in the state. But the feds only have 200 people for the whole nation, and they're really bad. And they're the ones that enforce that at the airports, inspections, customs. They work with customs where they bring – that's you read that in the paper every once in a while.
Yeah.
People bring that stuff in. But no, fish and game wardens as a rule, no. In fact, I don't know many officers that really have unless it's been a fluke.
Okay. I better add now that the radio that you hear in the background is service radio for Plumas County Sheriff. How do you think that the general public perceives the job of a game warden? Not an individual game warden, but you know, the job in general.
It's changing for the better, primarily because of TV
Control Force.
TV show Wild Justice. A lot of people didn't know what we did, and they didn't know. And you'd go to a gas station, and people would say, "Oh, I see you're wearing a gun now." I said, "Crap, okay." I just gave them a standard spiel. I mean, game wardens have been in California since 1871.
Mm-hmm.
1872. I'm sorry about that. 1872 was a gunfight at the OK Corral. So game wardens were in existence before you had the gunfight at the OK Corral, and we are the oldest state law enforcement agency. We're the oldest state law enforcement agency. We were created 50 years before Highway Patrol ever even came into existence or even carried guns. So we were carrying guns, and game wardens were being killed in line of duty 50 years before Highway Patrol was ever created. And our own California Fish and Game Warden Association came into existence 20 years before Highway Patrol was created. And so people say, Highway Patrol and guns and stuff, but I mean, they're newcomers on the scene as far as I'm concerned, and they talk about it. So they didn't know what we did. Your hunter and your fisherman, absolutely, but the general public did not know. And our jobs were throughout the 20s and 30s, 40s and 50s, were highly admired, highly respected. And then about the 60s, it seemed like it started going downhill, and 70s started going downhill. And 80s too. And all the emphasis was on hybrid patrol and other stuff. We just got lost. We got lost in the background. And people still didn't know what we did. And so now, with the show, I'd say I'm proud to be a part of that process to get a hold of them and get the show started. And the first day of production that they started was my last day of work. And they were up here, uh-huh. They were with me my last day of work. They came up and rode with me my last day of work. And
that's
pretty
neat.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm on the opening credit of it for a while, but I'm pretty happy to be a part of that.
So that show is really helping the service.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. And it shows us in a bad light in some ways, but in a good light in a lot of other ways is what we do and who we are and what we're doing. Yeah. Yeah. But people in the 20s and 30s and 10s, I mean, they knew. Everybody knows who's their. They know who you're in areas, especially like this right here. They know who your local game warden is. I mean, they know who it is. And I may not know, but they know who your local guy is. And not in the big cities, not so much. But up here, if they need to get a bear validated, deer validated, they come to your house. And you know, you talk, I don't know if this is the right place to go into. You talk about negatives and positives about the job. In 31 years, I never had an assigned weekend off or weekend day off. My days off were Monday, Tuesdays, and Tuesdays, Wednesdays. Yeah. And so for wardens out there, and not so much, not supervisors, because they get the weekends off, but a warden's life is hell on a family life. It's absolute hell on a family because you never have weekends off. And when you have the days off, your kids are in school. And if they got something to go do on a weekend, you have to work it. You have to work your holidays. You have to work all your holidays and mandatory work. And it's really, really hard on the families. And it takes a lot of family dedication and the wife and the kids to put up with their dad doing it. I mean, I put up with my dad never having weekends off. And he'd work the weekends. And your deer openers, your waterfowl openers, your fishery openers are always on a weekend. So you always have to work those weekends. And you can never take those days off. And people say you go into work, so work for fish and game. So you can go and hunt and fish. Well, no, you have to work all those weekends. Yeah, so you don't. Yeah. Well, how about I didn't go off track on it, but I want to interject that's true. And the divorce rate amongst game wardens is really high.
Pretty stiff.
Really high. I mean, I think my experience has been a lot higher than regular law enforcement. It just has been. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's some of the stuff that we want everybody to know. You know?
Sure.
And is the Fish and Game Department doing anything to, the department itself doing anything to inform the public on what you guys do the benefits of having wardens out there?
The last few years have been absolutely fantastic. Years before that, no. Our directors of the Department of Fish and Game are transients. They come in at the political whim. They're there for a couple years and leave. They're a couple years and leave. I mean, truly a transient where we stay with it, dedicated to it year after year. And I can't remember how many directors we had in the department. A lot of them. And they get in there and just seem to learn what the job's all about, and then they leave again. They start all over again. But Nancy Foley, our chief of patrol, has been great. It actually started with Ryan Broderick. With our director, he did a couple big things for game wardens. We used to work for we had six regions in the state, and we'd go through just a couple of a chain of command, be law enforcement people, and then we went to regional manager. And regional manager was a civilian, had no law enforcement authority. So you had like six different autonomies throughout the state, regional policies, regional things. So I remember one regional manager. When you make a stop on a person in the middle of the night by yourself, he didn't want us to turn on the white spotlight light up the situation because he felt that was overbearing on the people. And it's just pure, just common officer safety. You know, light it up and see what the hell is going on, what's taking place. And it's, no, you can't use that's, you know, you're being overburdening on them. We'd go around, you know, a corner at 2 o'clock in the morning, got three drunk guys standing over a steaming dough in the middle of the night, and no, you don't use extra lights on them. That's bullshit. Excuse my language, but. What happened is Ryan Broderick became director, and he was a game warden, and then he created straight line. And straight line means we didn't have to work through civilians anymore. We worked through straight sworn law enforcement, chief of patrol. And so we have dedicated law enforcement, chief of patrol. We have a standard set of policies and rules and regulations, our operating procedures, policy manuals. Everybody in the state adheres to the same now, and it's great. It's much, much better than what it was 4 or 5 years ago. And I'll say the Warden Association, we had a lot to do with that too, making that happen and push through and advocating for it. But when Ryan came in here and he put Nancy in charge, and Ryan retired, so we have different directors, number of different directors since then, but Nancy's been in there and been doing an awful lot. She's a good friend.
Good. Yeah, and you served as president of the Warden's Association for how long?
For a couple of years, and I was a board Northern Regional Director for, I guess, 7 years. And then right at the end, I was president, and then my wife got bucked off a horse and was paralyzed, and then I stepped down as president of the Warden Association at the time. But I went back to her. Man, I stayed just as involved as regional director, and that's when we created, like, say, the Peace Officers of California. Game Wardens founded Peace Officers of California. I was the founding president. Jerry Carno was secretary, and Steve Steyer was a treasurer. And so the three of us created Peace Officers of California, which is now a association that encompasses DOJ special agents, California Park Rangers, DMV investigators, just a whole litany of any state peace officer that's not a highway patrolman or a correctional officer. And we have an association for them, and that's what we created.
405.
Okay. And that's sworn officers.
Sworn officers only.
Okay. And law enforcement.
Right.
So it's your
state law enforcement officers, sworn officers.
All right. And that kind of frees you up from
105.
Is that what you're trying to create? Like another or your own union?
We're trying to create, in order to, for the numbers of game wardens to increase in California, the only solution is to create our own bargaining unit, or bargaining unit created solely of state peace officers, and not be in a union where the majority are non-law enforcement, which is where we are now. So we're in a union of 7,000 people, and the majority are non-law enforcement, 2,700 are sworn. And so whatever we get, all the rest of them have to get. And any funds we are able to obtain, the rest of them want. And so, like I said earlier, the people, when you go to get your driver's license, they, they get public safety retirement, the same retirement I do. And that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. That's wrong. That's pension. We need pension reform. And pension reform would be to get our own bargaining unit, then we could focus on getting more game wardens in the state and not have to worry about all these people that are on our riding our coattails.
Yeah. And what's the name of that union?
We're part of what they call California Statewide Law Enforcement Association, called CSLEA. Interesting thing is, if you look up Penal Code Section 146C, it states that in order to have the name law enforcement in your group or association, any group, 80% or more comprised must be sworn law enforcement officers. In this case, only about 30% are sworn law enforcement, but they call themselves California Statewide Law Enforcement Association.
Yeah.
They're in violation of the penal code just by having the name of their union like that. And why they haven't been filed on by by Department of Justice, I do not know. They should be. They absolutely should be, because the name of the union is illegal. And it's to keep people from misrepresenting themselves. If they want, you get somebody calls you up on the phone, hey, we're a member of the Sheriff's Association, or this or that. They'll say, hey, we're a member of California Statewide Law Enforcement Association. You automatically think that they're law enforcement?
Yeah.
Not. No. It's a lie. It's illegal. What they're doing is illegal.
Clerks at DMV.
Correct.
Wow. Do you think that game wardens are more environmentalist or conservationist?
Conservationist.
Conservationist?
Absolutely.
Okay. Managing the natural resources rather than trying to keep them untouched and...
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. We're green cops. No question we're the green cops. We're environmental cops. You can call us, we are the environmental green cops. So we're the conservationists first and foremost. I mean, the wise use of the resources. And you have to work with people. Work with the loggers. Up here, you're going to log and stuff and do it responsibly, and they're going to log next to a creek, make sure that they're adhering to the shade trees, and a certain percentage of shade is left over the creek and stuff, and allow them to log, but also provide for keeping the fishery habitat strong and good, and, and the pollution, and checking section dredgers and over limits. But yeah, it's conservationist. Your environmental cost, but no one else does what we do. And I give you a perfect example going down the road. You go down the road, you see a sack of trash on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
People drive by, high patrol, drive by it. Sheriff's Department drive by it. PD drives by it. As a game warden, put on some gloves, pick it off the side, open it up, dissect it, look and see what you can find. And if you find information that belonged, the trace back who dumped that trash, then you go and knock on the door and say, go pick up that trash. I'm going to cite you for it. You dump it off the side of the road, you dump it off the woods, or be a mattress or something, or a garbage house out there. I'll cite you for it. Every day that's out there is another violation. Go pick up your trash. But the key here is don't tell them where it's out. And so you go and you knock on the door to tell them, go pick up your trash. Okay. You go back out the next day, it's still there. Go back to the door and knock on it. Go pick up your trash. We did. Really? No, you didn't. Go pick it up. Okay. Come back the next, still there. Next day, knock on the door. We picked it up. No, you didn't. What happens? They have put so much freaking trash out in the woods, they don't know which trash piles you're talking about. And so they're going out there and picking up the trash from different places, but they haven't picked up the right trash pile yet, the one you found out. So they're going out and picking up their trash, but they haven't got the right stuff yet. But no one else does that. There's no other cop out there will do that, but game wardens will. So the Green Cop Environment, you know, we will do that. You know, we work litter and stuff, but other people don't do it, but we do. Yeah.
Well,
And you get great satisfaction from doing that. Is it a big, huge deal? No, but we take satisfaction doing it. No one else would do it.
Yeah.
No one else to get down and dirty on it.
Yeah. Well, that's a real plus, you know, for the department. Yeah. You were talking about logging. Do you have them keep like a watershed?
Okay.
You know, when and keep when they've cut all the trees, and when it rains, and a lot of it comes down into the creek or something and fouls up the...
What we have is stream bed alteration permits. If anybody wants to work within the high waters of the state of California, they have to have a stream bed alteration permit. It's called 1603, Section 1603. And we enforce those regulations, and I issued a ton of those things. We're the wardens, the only ones doing it for a long time. It started taking too much of our time. I mean, way, an awful lot of our time, where we couldn't go out and do patrols. We're doing these permits. And what happened is a California Environmental Quality Act, the ruling came through. We had every 1600 permit, you had to comply with CEQA. And before, you'd sit on the hood of the truck, the logger, make out an application, whoever it might be. I fill out the application. He gave us a check and write it up, and done and over with. Well, then they said you had to have a 30-day review and then another review and publish it in the paper and this and that. And then the permit ends up being 30-some-odd pages instead of a 2-page deal. You can look and see, putting in a culvert in a creek, pretty cut and simple, really simple, but made incredibly complicated. We can't do that anymore.
105 status.
Wardens cannot do that anymore. So they kicked it back to environmental scientists who get paid a whole lot more money, and then they started doing those things, and it took forever for them to do them. That's a cut to it, but it's a bad part of our system. But we would do that. So you'd make recommendations on how the logger or whoever it is to do the job to minimize the impact the least on the stream the least, and protect the fishery at the same time. So we'd have these permits that we would do. And at Lake Almanor, like a lake I have right up here by PG&E. People want to go and they want to mess around the lake all the time. They want to put in a beach so they can sunbathe and bring their boat up on shore, and they want to remove rocks and they want to remove some of the substance up. And they'd say, no, we can't do that.
Yeah.
You have a clump of rocks, that's where the baby fish go. That's where the crustaceans go. That's where the crawdads go. And that's their habitat. And so they say, well, I'll hit my boat on the hole of the, my boat's hole will hit the rocks and tear a hole in it. Then anchor it offshore or put in a boat dock or something. But
513-304.
Excuse me. 513.
I left some paperwork on the front counter. If that could be shuttled to Quincy tonight, that'd be great.
At 10-4, we'll do so.
Control 304, 10-10.
10-10.
Anyway, those permits. So, people...
13-4-5 anymore?
A 513.
I gotta do a paper trail letters later this evening. I'll pick them up and take it over.
Very good, thank you. About what time?
Uh,
10-4. Go ahead. Anyway, I got called off. But, yeah. Suction dredge permits. Watch or make sure illegal suction dredging. Suction dredging can only take place now. There's a total ban on it. I don't quite understand that. It shouldn't be that way. Suction dredging, you have a season, and you can only suction dredge after the trout are done spawning, like the creeks up here. The last Saturday of April is trout season opens up, and you know what? No, next weekend. And trout season opened up next week. Fish season opened up next week. I'm trying to think of it. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry, getting off track here.
That's all right. Learn more and more. All right. So, yeah, we just talked about the litterers and all that stuff. How about people disturbing sensitive habitats? Like, I know there was some.
I got to listen on this one, too. Sorry.
All right.
That's a medical aid. I'm supposed to go with any of those.
There we go.
4-5.
All right.
Perfect. We're at number 7, but it's going to be
on
38
theater. There's a. Like a big cliff face, and I think it's called Lover's Leap. There's a campground there, and people go and climb up that thing. And I stopped at.
Where's this at? What?
That's up above Strawberry.
Okay.
Up Highway 50, up above Kyber's.
Okay.
And it's like a big rock cliff face, and people go up. At that Lover's Leap campground, and they climb that rock all the time. And they, when I stopped at the Forest Service there in I can't remember the name of it. Before I got there, they said that you have to stay away from a certain part of that.
The cliff, the rock?
Yeah, the cliff, because there's peregrine falcons nesting up there.
Okay.
So would do game wardens kind of keep an eye on something like that? I noticed that there wasn't a whole lot of Forest Service trucks that coming around there.
Well, yes and no. You don't have any really minimum distances. You can't take down any nests, like bald eagle nests. You would think a bald eagle nest in a tree is protected year-round, but it's not. And as long as it's not occupied, like let's say if they want to log a tree and it's got a bald eagle nest in it, if it's not occupied, they can cut it down.
Ah.
And same thing with around Lake Amador. There's well over, we've got about half a dozen bald eagle nests up there at Lake Amador. And then, taking some of the other nests that we got to watch over there. Different, but that's what it is. Yeah, you kind of watch them, but if it's not occupied, people can do what they can cut those trees down. They're not not automatically protected. They're only protected if it's an active nest site in them.
Oh, okay. Did you develop any specializations while you were working as a warden? I mean, are there specializations in being a game warden, like being hunting or commercial fishing?
Well, do you get specialized with whatever district that you have? You know, each warden has a unique geographical district, I think, from any other one. You know, if you're working in Indio, you got, like the desert, you'd have the bighorn sheep, and you'd have the reptiles, and all those people that are reptile hunters and take the bighorn sheep. If you're over, if you got Fort Bragg or someplace over on the coast over there, then you're specialized in working abalone. Mm-hmm. And then if you're on a patrol boat working out of San Francisco Bay, it just depends on the seasons. You got your Dungeness crabs, you have your herring fishery, you have... stuff that goes on at night over there. Then if you've got the Sacramento River, you become a specialist at working sturgeon poachers or the salmon poachers, and certain ethnic groups where you're out in California become more of a specialist on working those ethnic groups.
Yeah.
Up here, I was probably big game more than anything else, deer and bear.
405 status.
working spotlighters, deer poachers, trout fishing. I had it made up here in this area. It's pretty nice. Like in Red Bluff, you became specialist working salmon snaggers and hog hunters, big hunters up here, down there, like in Red Bluff. And then I became a warm water fisheries kind of an expert when I was down in UBC to Marysville, upland game, pheasants, ducks, sturgeon, stripers, that kind of stuff. And so you've kind of adapted where you work. Yeah.
Whatever district you were in.
Sure.
Okay. Was the job ever boring?
Nah.
No?
No. 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 Like I say, as long as you have a drive for it, you got a drive for it. It's been boring if you don't have a drive for it to go out there and enforce a law. But no, it was never boring. There was always something going on. Always something going on. Up here, the snow, and I became pretty adept at snowmobiling. And I don't know, just like in my personal life, last year I probably went 1,000 miles on my sled, and the year before that probably about 1,500 miles working ice fishermen, check ice. Yeah. When I was working, I would check ice fishermen and that kind of stuff. Now I just kind of ride. I don't really have an ice fish. I should have gone ice fishing, but I don't. It's kind of fun to go riding. You know? So in the wintertime, I do a lot of snowmobiling. Yeah.
Okay, so...
But boring, no. No, there's always something going on.
You didn't... I mean, there wasn't a lot of surveillance or anything waiting for some guy to show up at a bear bait or something like that.
You can do that. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of boring times, absolutely. Oh, there's a lot of boring times, but you just keep motivated and doing it. Yeah, if you're working a bait pile, it takes a lot of work to work a bait pile, and actually sometimes it can be boring of working littering, and I didn't mind working littering at all. If you see a group of people out there on the shore of a lake someplace, around a creek, and they're partying, drink a lot of beer, so they get a litter.
Yeah.
You know, good chance of it. Well, you got to sit down and park and pull out your spot scope, and you might have to wait for 5 hours or something for them to leave, because you have to wait for an overt act of them leaving the area, leaving the trash behind. You can't just go up. They have trash all over. You can't write them a ticket because they haven't left yet. You possibly could clean it all up. You have to wait for them, get to their vehicle, and start leaving the vehicle. I mean, get in the vehicle and start driving away, and then catch up to them, then write them a ticket because they left the trash behind. And that's... time intense work. You have to sit there for a long time and wait. And sometimes, nowadays, it's like more often than not, they take all the crap with them. And so you a lot of time wasted on trying to catch them at it. But when they do leave a bunch of trash behind, for me, I'd get a pretty good feeling in catching those at it.
Yeah.
You know, doing something like that. A litter case. Who else would do that? No one else would do it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the sheriff's safe is not going to do it. Higher patrolman's not going to do it. Police are not going to do it. It would take some game warden the time and the effort and the patience to sit there and watch those people catch them littering. Unless you just happen to buy a freak to catch somebody throwing a can out or a bottle out of a vehicle going down the road.
Let's see, you talked a little bit about the districts you were assigned to.
Mm-hmm.
Was any of them easier to work than the others, or was one really stick in your mind that it was really tough, or...
Tama County is intense. Tama County is intense. Tama? And it's gotten more intense out of Red Bluff because of the cartel, the marijuana grows.
Oh.
And the cartel is overwhelming that county. It's just massive grows down there. Massive grows.
Okay.
And from when I left that district, it's gotten worse. I'm just talking now in the present day, present sense for those guys. And I had it. You had Tama County was intense because you had hog hunters, you had deer hunters, you had salmon, a lot of hunting activity. You get the four-wheelers with the dogs chasing pigs. They come to a fence, they just cut it, and then keep on going. Getting too many mosquitoes, we can go inside. It's totally up to you. If you're okay, I'm fine with it.
I'm all right.
Okay. But now the cartel, talking to those guys, put it this way. A couple guys last year were sitting there watching for spotlighters, and they park on a skid trail. Because you block out. When you take your vehicle, if you saw pictures of my rig, I blacked it out, and there's no chrome. You blocked it completely out, and you tell a newbie because he still has chrome and crap on it. But you just block it out so you're not seen at night, and you don't want to be seen at night. Vehicle goes by down the road, pull out behind him and follow behind him. You have a little sneak light down below, mounted on the bumper that lights up the road a little bit. But if you get half a moon, you can follow him just fine. Yeah. Use night vision equipment, and see if they're spotlighting or what they're doing at night. It's what they're up, lots of different things. But these guys are parked on a skid road waiting for a vehicle to go by and watching spotlighting, and all of a sudden they felt the truck bump. Well, what the heck? And looked around, and anyway, it was actually a pickup point for dope. And a couple guys if I remember right, I think they said three guys, they threw sacks like 50, 75 pounds worth of marijuana on the back of the pickup thinking they were being picked up. This is their pickup point. And Wards are sitting there watching. The guys come behind. One thing is very scary. These guys came up and they didn't know it and threw the dope in the back of the pickup. But they arrested one. The other ones got away. So and then they had a little bit of a contest a year or so ago. And one night to see who could contact the most cartel vehicles at night. And I think the winner was four. You know, I think there's four guys, and one guy got one, and two guys got two, and another guy got four. Contacted four, hauling dope out in September, October off of National Forest land up there in Tehama County. So that aspect there is dangerous. That's really dangerous. If you watch Wild Justice, Brian Boyd up there, you'll see him. His dog, I'm trying to think how many bites his dog has got so far on dope growers. Marijuana. That's changed. When you and I going up and stuff, people, you call dope, marijuana, it's not. In this job, that's where I realize now, Sheriff's Department, meth has changed law enforcement forever, faces law enforcement forever. Mm-hmm. Dope is meth. That's what that's called now. Yeah. You know, marijuana, Prop 215, everybody's got it, but you got the cartels, and they're doing the damage to the lands and stuff. Yeah. But these huge, huge plantations, not good.
Yeah, I've seen that on the TV show. These guys leave car batteries laying in a creek and their irrigation and stuff, and they chemicals running down into it, and it's just a big
mess. And a lot of poison. Put out antifreeze, kills bear, deer. They'll come and lick it, and it's deadly to it. And there's something else they got out there. A bear will come and lick it in the gardens because it'll tear up the water lines, and a deer will open some. So they'll kill everything that's around the marijuana grows. So they're hell on wildlife. Because they just kill them. Deer come in, shoot them. Bear come in, shoot them. That's not good. You know, squirrels, kill them. Poison all over the place.
And I remember hearing a few years ago that some guy and his son went up. They were going
out east of Sacramento, if I remember.
Yeah. And I think it was the dad ended up getting shot in the face or something by some of those guys.
True.
Not a good situation. Have you ever felt like any of those guys might try to get retribution? I know you guys are more out there. It's easier to get information out like where you guys live than like the federal agents or something.
You know, everybody knows where I'm at. I've never had anybody.
4 and HBD agreed to go to bed for the day. 1031-1098.
I myself, no. But I've always treated people with respect. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're a criminal or whatever. I treat them with the way that I'd want to be retreated. Mm-hmm. And you know, write them a ticket and a handshake. And, you know, you saw the stuff on my walls in there. I had a bunch of stuff in there. Mm-hmm. But my most favorite item in there was a letter a guy wrote to the court, and he said, I was hunting Lassen County, X6.
405
Central 1034. He said, I saw some nice country, saw some nice deer, and met some nice people. One was a game warden that gave me this ticket. And he said, tell him happy holidays to him and his family from me.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And that is more important than any of that other stuff I got on the walls. I mean, just that. And that's what I strive for. Some of the new pups, probably not that way.
Yeah.
And I think that shows up on Wild Justice too. But you got to treat people with respect. You really do. And there's a code. Our job, more than anything else, has got to be education. I mean, 90% education. I mean, for you to go and look at the hunting and fishing regulations, I mean, they're constantly fluid. They change every year. The seasons change. The bag limits change. The poundages, it changes. And you got to educate the public. And so educate the public. Let them know what the laws are. So the bad guys go after the bad guys and hammer them, but the other people, you got to educate. You got to work with them. You got to work with them. And I can't keep treating people with crap out there out in the woods and not expect to have, you know, be shot someday. But if you treat them with respect, then, you know, respect you back too. So you got to be able to relate to people and to talk to people and treat them with respect. Yeah, absolutely. You got to treat them with respect. You really do.
Well, that's good. So you're an outdoorsman yourself. You like to, do you hunt, fish?
I did growing up, but this job, not so much anymore. No, I haven't had a fishing license or a hunting license for a few years now. No, my kids have grown up. they've gone different directions. They both work with the Forest Service. One's on Helitalk now with the Forest Service, and the other one's with as a civil engineer with Tahoe National Forest. I haven't the last few years. I've got enough interest here on my property and take care of my wife who's paralyzed, and my mom is an aging parent, and so you got to take care of aging parents, and you got the horses and got the property, and I got this job. So no, I haven't hunted and fished. I have other interests, but and I'm still involved with the community. I mean, with Rotary and with the rodeo grounds, Riding Roughing Club, and the fire department, and the volunteer fire department, and do lots of calls there and working over there and stuff. And I haven't slowed down. If anything, I'm busier than I ever have. I mean, I'm a reserve deputy part time, but this month alone, I'm working 21 10-hour shifts. So covering people. I said I'll cover shifts, and that's what I'm doing. But it's all good. So, no, I'm not having a hunter fishing. No, I haven't.
It's too busy.
I might down the line with the ground kids or get go with kids, but we haven't. In the summertime, we got a ski boat, so we'll go wakeboard and ski with the kids. And they're in their 20s, and so they're not so much into sedentary of kicking back with the fishing pole. We're more into jumping and carousing
burning energy.
Yeah, partying out there and having a good time and more active. Yeah, an active lifestyle.
Your wife was telling me about an instance where you went on a horseback ride with your boys.
Okay.
And you ended up is in a wilderness area, and you ended up finding giving a guy a ticket.
Okay.
And he turned out to be your youngest son's teacher.
I think a school superintendent, or I think it was, the administrator.
That must have been must have been. I imagine your son was about to pull his hair out.
No, you know, it was okay, because he saw the kid in school later on, and he told me, well, we know whose dad can kick whose dad's ass now. So,
man.
Yeah.
Do you think that fish and game wardens have made a difference, like in the past, or
absolutely,
as compared from the past to now? What is it? They doing more, or is it harder to get the same amount done? I know you're short of wardens now by quite a bit.
A lot more. We have the same number of officers that we did 50 years ago, 60 years ago. Same number of game wardens there is now as what there were 60 years ago.
And a lot more hunters and fishermen.
A lot less hunters. A lot less hunters.
Less hunters?
Oh, yeah. I think we're down to a couple hundred thousand hunters in California, and we were at, I'm trying to think when my dad was game warden. We were around 5 to 6, when my dad became a game warden, there's around 5 to 6 million fishermen in the state of California, and he had a couple million hunters. Now, I think you have about 1.5 million fishermen, and you have maybe 200,000 hunters. So you've dropped from 2 million hunters to 200,000 hunters, and then you've dropped from 6 million fishermen to 1.5 million to 1.8 million fishermen. But you have a huge increase in population in the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more people in the state of California. So, like I said, wardens were really known, and we had a lot more people to work to monitor as far as actual hunting and fishing activity. But now you've got a lot more people, and you have a lot more non-resource related, non-hunter fisherman calls, green people, environmentalists. You have to do more environmentalist jobs for people that really don't go towards your wages, you know, contribute towards your wages directly. Hunters and fishermen contribute to my wages directly. Mm-hmm. The general public doesn't, you know. Bear complaints, like Tahoe is a prime example. Like 1 year, I logged in 221 bear break-ins in this district here. Bear breaking into cabins, into trailers, like it shows you in the picture in there and stuff. And so you'd have to go and do depredation permits on those, and an education around Lake Avenor, people get rid of this bear. People say, this bear is coming to get in my garbage. get off your butt in the morning and put your garbage out in the morning instead of the night before, and you won't have that beer problem. And put your garbage inside the house, you're not going to have that problem. So yeah. It's an education. It's pretty simple. To me, you get kind of tired of it, but it's people, oh, thank you very much for telling me. And yeah. Okay. But you get tired of educating people to know this stuff over and over and over again. Yeah. So you have these kind of issues or a lion, and, you know, you got to deal with lions, and lions are respect what they can do, and lions have really come back pretty strong. And so you got to handle lion complaints, and we've had seen the lion the last few nights in Greenville. If I see one in town, Greenville, I'm going to shoot it. I'll get rid of it. Public safety. Don't need to have that many around town. You know? So as a public safety threat, get rid of it. And so, you know,
405 status.
The job has changed. Cartel has changed. Marijuana has changed. A lot more regulations in effect. And it's really complicated on the ocean where they've created these MLPAs, marine life protection areas. I call them marine life poaching areas because it's going to be, you can't enforce them. You don't have enough officers out there to enforce them. I think dedicated marine officers, we're only around 20 dedicated marine officers, maybe 27 dedicated for the ocean. So you got 1,100 miles of coastline, you go out 200 miles out to sea, and you got 21 dedicated people for working the ocean only.
Yeah.
It's impossible. And so they create these zones out there where you can't fish at all. They can't be enforced. And so the problem with that is you're sport fishermen, you're going to create poachers out of honest fishermen because they can't be caught. They're going to go out there. So this guy's buddy goes out there. Well, I went out there in MLPA, and I went out fishing. I caught all these extra fish and stuff, and I'm never going to get caught. Never going to get caught. And so this guy that's fishing in an area that doesn't have any fish, or does have fish, but his fishing's not as good, he sees his buddy going over here day after day, week after week, month after month, and never getting patrolled, never getting caught by a game warden because you don't have any game wardens around. Pretty soon he says, screw it, I'm going to go there too. So then he starts going over there. So you're forcing a sportsman to become a poacher in that regard. If you can force it, okay. If you made it all the same and the curriculum would all be the same playing ground, okay. But if you don't have enough officers to enforce those marine life protection areas and increase the officers, they're not going to do any good at all. They're creating an honest person to create a crime, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. I hope I don't know if I explained it to you well or not on that.
But yeah, I understand it. Yeah.
Cool.
By the simple fact that you don't have enough guys, there's going to be more people breaking the rules.
True.
On
that. Yeah, just never chance going to be caught. Yeah.
What about on-the-job hazards? I imagine you got a lot of them. Do you have worse ones from animals or humans?
We had a card. Let's see if I pull this card up. I still have it in here. We carry. And on that card was all these exotic diseases the animals carry, can have, and stuff. And so when you go and see the doctor, present this card and have them look at these exotic diseases that you might be to check for that you normally don't come across. And we're talking spirochetes, you're talking relapsing fever, you're talking Lyme disease, talking rabies. There's a whole list of stuff, and that was not in this one, it's another one. I'll send you the link to it. Of all these diseases. And a number of guys got Lyme disease and having to take Lyme disease and rabies and different things out there. There's a lot of crap out there regarding diseases. Here it is. Okay, physician's alert. The holder of this card is likely to be exposed to certain zoonotic diseases which are not routinely considered in the differential diagnosis of febrile illnesses. We request that you consider the following diseases in case of serious illness, like for me. Okay, rabies, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Lyme disease, Q fever, plague, tularemia, leptospirosis, brucellosis, typhus, arbovirus, encephalitis, spirochetal relapsing fever, cytopsychosis, anthrax, coccidiomycosis, giardia, ectococcus, and hyoidatid disease. So that's kind of stuff, you know, dealing with animals and stuff, you come up with that kind of different things. So, the normal physician wouldn't look at or do.
Wow. Yeah, that's, geez, a lot of them you can't even pronounce. Yeah, so it's just, that's a big hazard right there.
Yeah, sure.
Just being able to catch exotic diseases.
Yeah, and gloves, yeah. I've got to wear gloves and stuff.
You had any near misses or close calls that really stick in your mind?
No, the closest call that you have, and every warden understands it, working long, long nights, long, long hours on opening weekends, is getting freaking tired.
Yeah.
And coming back middle of the night, these winding roads, and trying to stay awake.
Yeah.
And if you reach that point, because you're a long ways from home, you can camp out. I always carry a sleeping bag in my truck and a thing.
Control 4-5-10-8, negative violation.
And get tired, the smart thing to do is be able to pull off the road and get some sleep on the way back, because you can be hours away from home, and you'd start it on an opening weekend, you start the night before working spotlighters and night flight,
yeah.
Get up early, work the whole day that next night, coming home or camp out. I mean, so lots of times if we're, waking up, that's probably more dangerous than anything, is driving home and being asleep. As far as other folks, there's only one time that I ever turned back from a violation and working some salmon snaggers, and three guys were snagging salmon, and then they had a lookout armed with a rifle, and he had a rifle, and they were all armed, they had a rifle, and that was prior to before we had walkie-talkies.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't always have these things, and when we first started on, we didn't, and in fact, a warden was killed in 79-80, and he was shot in the leg, and he bled to death before he got back to his rig and called out on the radio, but he didn't have a handy-talkie. Other police agencies did, but we didn't. But the parents of that kid, I say kid, he's like 27 or 28, if I remember correctly, wanted to sue the department, but they said, you know, we'll call off this lawsuit if you provide a handy-talkie to every game warden in the state. We have radio communications on foot. And so they did that.
Wow.
And they said, okay, so they called off and they got us all handsets. We didn't have handsets. My dad was after a bear poacher or a bait pile, and he got an anonymous call of this bear. But you put bait out there, and the bear come in and do it. It's legal to do it, to run your bear off of that bait pile. To do that. And so we got this call, this location up behind Bucks Lake where it was, and go up the skid trail, go up this, follow this, pretty exact directions. And he was getting loaded up to head up there. And this, I think it was late 60s, and he got a second phone call. Of course, you know, you didn't know who they came from or anything like that. And he said, hey, I just want to let you know, he said, that's a trap. And there's a bear trap set right there. You won't know it, but there's a bear, a big, huge jaw trap.
Mm-hmm.
And for you there, and he said, that's meant for you. And so if he had stepped on that trap, he went up there, and yeah, he found it. And it would have been right in a place where he would have walked right up this trail and could have sat in this bear trap. And if that clamped on his leg, he would have been able to call it on a radio, no cell phones, no nothing. And he would have been stuck up there. And you cannot get a bear trap off your leg. You cannot. You have to have a big old huge C-clamp and wind that thing up tight and get that off.
Because
they're huge. I mean, they're meant for bear. And he would have died there. My dad would have died there on that. And then you've had other people, you know, poke guns at you and stuff, but no, you sneak up on people and you use tactical advantage, and where you catch them when they're not expecting you, you know, sneak and stuff. So, no, I was lucky in that regard of never being shot at or anything like that. Yeah, it's okay. You'd assist other law enforcement people, and you'd make arrests for people who got warrants and drugs and murder and stuff like that. But as far as really fearing for my life at one point, no, but I had to. There was one time when I remember I was watching a spotlighter and it came across this ravine, and I hid down below the road. My rig was below the road, way about in the Yola Bullies. The rig came up and they stopped. I couldn't see what they're doing, so I poked my head up. And just as I poked my head up, he shot.
Yeah.
And I had visions of my head being exploded. He poached a deer right then, but I couldn't see what he was doing, so I popped up my head just enough to see him. And he basically just shot above my head a little ways. That scared the crap out of me. But that was inadvertent. That wasn't towards me directly, but just being in that situation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's you guys run across a lot of stuff like that. I was thinking probably the dealing with the dope plants, the
cartel?
Plantations,
cartel. They got that going at the cartel. Yeah, I say that one Brian Boyd. I don't know how many dogs bites his dog has got. If you watch that program, they're taking the camera and they put it on the collar.
Oh,
and
right.
I think they've got three bites recorded on TV or the dog. Okay, go get him. And the camera's on the collar and he's just bounce, 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 and latch on. Ah, you see the arm to the legs flailing, and that's all the camera mounted on the dog. And I think he's got three film bites from the dog's point of view so far.
Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, what do you think about the state of California wildlife right now? Do you think that there's something coming down the road that's going to either do it good or do it bad? Is it going? You know, is it improving or getting worse?
Getting worse. Absolutely getting worse. No question. The deer herd. You just look at the deer herd in and of themselves, and we're not modern, and we need to have doe hunts. I don't know if people don't say the doe hunts, but if you're going to have a good game management system, you got to have doe hunts, and that's not happening. I don't see that ever happening in the state. It won't happen in the state. The lions are really we need to have, should have a lion season. We need to eliminate a whole lot of lions, and we're not doing that. They're fully protected right now. Hang on a second here. Hey, can I give you a call right back?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So, too many predators and they kill too many of the.
They kill probably about two deer a week, but then they're. There's a lot of lions. I mean, there's a lot of lions, and a lot of people. The porcupines. This hasn't been brought out at all, but the porcupines you don't see any porcupines anymore. Porcupines are gone, and you don't see any porcupines. They've disappeared, and the only predator of the porcupines are the lions, and they've come on really strong last 30 years, and. Porcupines are really prevalent in 60s and 70s, and back Forest Service issued strychnine, and we're killing them. And in the nighttime, I'd see three or four doing a night patrol, and I haven't seen a porcupine in 20 years.
Oh.
And I think that's attributed to the lions. But we need to have a hunting over that. But the general population of California voted to not have any lion hunting, so we don't have any lion hunting. And so that's a anti-hunter sort of thing. The deer populations has dropped way, way, way down. In this county, we have the Eastern Tehama deer herd, largest migratory deer herd in the state. When I started working for the department, it was right around 80,000 animals. And then last time I knew, it was like 26 or 27,000 animals.
Oh,
so it's only 25% of what it was 30 years ago.
Oh. Yeah.
And it's gone down, and that's just the habitat development around Lake Almanor and other people and the road kills. I don't know, but they're just going down. Number of deer totally are going down. I don't see the wildlife population in California getting any better. One thing, you don't have the funding source for. You ain't going to have any more. If you don't,
5,
you don't get any more game wardens, you're not going to get any more wildlife.
Yeah.
No, some people disagree with that, but I'm a very strong proponent on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see how that would be. Stuff like doe hunts and. Do they kind
of east of the entrance to the fairgrounds?
Eat the place out and
get a lot of barren does. You don't have the bucks impregnating the does, and you have a lot of barren does. You don't have the reproduction taking place. The bucks are just hunted down to nothing, and you have very, very few bucks. You might have 100 deer, maybe 5 out of 100 to be a buck or something.
Oh, okay.
And I could, if we had a blackboard, I could do just a basic biology class 101 in 10 minutes, and I can show you the whole reason why you need to do it. It's not ever going to happen in California.
Just got to keep the numbers.
Not going to happen. Not going to happen in California.
Okay. Yeah. So there laws need to be changed that won't ever be changed because of the,
True.
Is there anything you'd like to say to Californians about the state of their natural resources, like fish and wildlife, the habitats.
It's incredible, and this is not the answer anyone would ever expect to see coming. The only way you will ever in order to improve your water quality, which is what we do, predictive water quality, you know, taking water samples and that kind of stuff, and the wardens are the ones that patrol the oil refineries and making sure the you don't have pollution come out of the oil refinery. You got Coast Guard too, but the wardens are out there doing that part of it, and the ships that come in and the dumping, we talked about the pollution and people dumping barrels and stuff and just trash, all that kind of stuff. The only way you're going to ever increase the number of wardens, which are the environmental officers of the state of California. California, we have the lowest ratio of game wardens, conservation officers, general population of any state in the United States and of any Canadian province, and not by just a little bit, by a lot. We have the lowest numbers per ratio by far. It's incredible. The only way that's going to change is to get more officers, make that happen, is get us in a different bargaining unit than the current union we're in. And we've tried. I've dedicated the last 8 years of my career working in the Capitol. I made well over 100 trips in the Capitol trying to increase the numbers of officers in the state and educating and stuff. And we constantly came across a one barrier, and that one barrier is we're absolutely put in the wrong union. And that union keeps us down. We have no representation within that union. We're not on the board of directors. Our voice is not heard when it comes to negotiation for our equipment, for our radios, for our guns, any of this kind of stuff. We have no say. No say. Just what the department gives us out of good of our hearts and salaries and the numbers. Our parent union is holding us down. Our parent union is directly affecting the quality of the wildlife and the fisheries and our water in the state of California. And that's cause CSLEA, because we're in this particular bargaining unit, game wardens are screwed until that's changed. Absolutely no question. And you can ask any game warden in the state right now that should come up with that same answer, and the guys in the state in the past too. That's the problem California faces right now, is a political problem in Sacramento, just because we're in the wrong bargaining unit.
Yeah.
But true story. Yeah.
And the problem is that need to bring the warden's pay up more to parity with other law enforcement.
Then you brought up to parity. You know, if we brought us up closer, it'd be wonderful. It'd be absolutely wonderful. But you need more officers. We need more officers. 200 people ain't going to do it. Yeah. Ain't going to cut it. Ain't going to cut it for this whole state. You need more officers. There's enough dedication people to come on board and do this job just like I was. There's a core group. Pay would be great, but what happens, and a problem is, like Sonoma County, where we have a tremendous problem with abalone and the abalone poaching stuff going on there. Okay, if I'm going to say, I think it's the last four wardens now that gone to Sonoma County. So they come on at a certain pay rate, and a deputy sheriff there, Sonoma County, is making well over twice as much as what the warden is. So if you're a 24-year-old kid, and man, you want to take a girl to a date, or you want to buy a new four-wheel drive pickup or something like that, and you don't have the money to do it, and what's it going to be? Protect the abalone, or go to this other agency where I can afford a house and be able to start a family?
215, negative
contact, maybe very beginning is going to be girlfriends or boyfriends and vehicles, that kind of stuff. Later on, it's a family and looking out for your family in college, that kind of stuff. Jump ship. And so I think the last four wardens that have worked there their Bridge Cities have all been converted over to the Sheriff's Department. They've all recruited them over. And so, come to work for us, double your salary, and do the same job. You can work, we'll let you work fishing game if you want. Okay, and they do. And so they get fishing game wardens. The new guys are highly recruited by other law enforcement agencies to go to work for them. And so we're robbed by a lot of people. We can't compete salary-wise.
Yeah.
And that's where the big problem is. They'd like to do the job, but when somebody else recruits them, away you go. So the retention is a big deal.
Yeah, the pay would be a good thing for retention and
keep seasoned officers, all that training. You pay, our academy is the longest academy in the state of California. I think our academy is 5 or 6 weeks longer than Highway Patrol. And more training, because you got to have all that basic core law enforcement training, but then you got to learn all this fishing game, the identification of species, the different ducks, the amphibians, different methods of marine fisheries and harvest of fisheries and all that kind of stuff. There's a lot more knowledge that's required to do this job. You got to have your basic core law enforcement, but you got to have all those natural resources along all too, and that's not taught to you. And so you got to do it. So they'll grab us, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, is there any last comments or statements or anything?
No, thanks for doing that. Thanks for doing the project, and look forward to seeing it and interested in how it all turns out. It'll be pretty cool.
All right. Well, I'll keep you informed. And,
okay.
And I'll get that. I'll email you that list.
Okay.
Too.
Okay.
All right.